This is Man-at-Arms, and you are listening to the Masters of Grayskull.
Thank you, Mr. Gary Chalk, as Man-at-Arms from the 2002 He-Man and the Masters of the Universe cartoon series for giving us that promo. I'm, of course, TFG, and Mike joining me is Optimus Solo. Hello, sir.
Hello.
We just want to put this at the beginning of every episode for Masters of Grayskull. We dedicate every single episode of this to the memory of Dean Stephan. Dean, who was the writer, story editor, all that kind of stuff on the 2002 He-Man series, passed away May 15th of 2018. And not only are we doing this because we're finishing our Powers of Grayskull series podcast, we're also, I feel at this point, doing this in the memory of him, because the stories that he helped create and build for this series, it revitalized the MOTU franchise, in my personal opinion.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's unfortunate that we didn't have a chance to ever talk to him for the show, but we can at least remember him as we move forward.
Absolutely. And now, on with the show.
I am Adam, Prince of Eternia, defender of the secrets of Castle Grayskull. This is Cringer, my fearless friend. Fabulous.
Hello, this is Optimus Solo, and welcome to the 108th chapter in our Powers of Grayskull series. With me for this journey into the Masters of the Universe franchise, as always, is TFG and Mike. Hello.
Hello, and we are now Masters of Grayskull, because that space shit didn't happen.
But before we can finally close the book on that space shit, you have a correction to make.
Yeah, I think it was last episode, 106-107, where I said that Brian Dobson was Skeletor. I meant Campbell Lane for the new adventures. Obviously, I knew it was Campbell Lane, because Campbell Lane was Rampage in Beast Wars. So I guess I was just so excited to get to the good stuff that I misspoke and said Brian Dobson was Skeletor in New Adventures, which he's not. He is Keldor / Skeletor and a bunch of other characters.
See, that's the type of mistake that we can forgive. I'm sure you'll have other mistakes that I won't be as forgiving for, like when you think an episode is better or worse than I do, coming up soon.
But I think we can both agree that almost all of these episodes are going to be better than any of the last 65.
It's
going
to be interesting, because when we get to the ratings and rankings or whatever of each of these episodes, I was going to talk about it, I'll talk about it now, is that I'm trying to like temper my ratings a little bit, because I don't want it to be just the fact that these are that much better than the other one that makes me overrank these episodes. Like, I want to be like, okay, I got to leave some room for there to be something, you know, higher or lower or whatever. Like, we'll see here. But in this episode of Masters of Grayskull, that's what we're calling it, right?
Mm-hmm.
We'll be giving you our thoughts on the first three episodes of that series, which are all entitled The Beginnings, Part 1, 2, and 3.
Yep.
So we hope you're ready, because it's finally time to go back to Eternia. All right, first up today, guys, as you could probably suspect, is episode 1, which is entitled The Beginnings, Part 1, air date somewhere around August 16th, 2002. Writer was Dean Stephan, and the plot synopsis goes a little something like this. On the distant planet of Eternia, young Prince Adam finds out by the Sorceress of Grayskull that he is destined to become a hero of great power in order to stop the forces of Skeletor from rising. This is kind of setting the stage of some of that. doesn't go all the way through all that, but it kind of sets the stage for what we get. So, Mike, we start with a flashback to King Randor's earlier days, as well as some of the other characters that we learn, that we know and love, some of their earlier days as we deal with this council and an attack from Keldor on Randor and kind of the repercussions of that. Then we flash forward to Teela and Prince Adam, and we kind of get to present day as far as what we're talking about for the rest of the series and kind of their interactions, and then the return of Skeletor / Keldor. So what were your thoughts on how we kind of, how they decided to start this series and where they kind of took off from?
I love the origin story, and we see just how and what caused Skeletor to become Skeletor, because the whole Keldor thing, I think they obviously added that in the folklore since the original 80s series, kind of a thing. And I, along with Adas Baron, had been, and we still are, reading the Masters of the Universe comics that DC Comics has been doing. And in the comics, they do have the Keldor, Skeletor, the mm-hmm. Keldor past and the Skeletor, you know, present kind of thing. In that, I don't think they do so much in this. I don't remember if they say it so much in this. But in that, they full-on make it a family connection.
They will eventually.
Yeah. Okay, I was not sure. I thought that's where this had started, like where the comics got it from was this. But yeah. I absolutely love that. I think that's great. The animation is top-notch. The character designs are classic yet modern because they're slightly different, bulkier kind of things. I mean, Man-at-Arms still looks like Man-at-Arms. Sorceress kind of looks like, I mean, Zar is great, but you know, her design is all new and different kind of a thing. Adam's design, everybody can shut up about the fucking pink shirt now, because it's more magenta than pink in this.
Yeah, and this kind of as a preface, guys, since this is the first episode of the series, usually when we get to the first episode of the individual series, we do spend a little bit more time kind of going into the characters, mm-hmm. the designs, the voices, the some of those choices. So we will be kind of going in a little bit more in depth into those here, and we'll, you know, in the future episodes, we'll only talk about new characters that appear at such detail. But I think a couple things that I noticed right off the bat, and you kind of started to mention it there a little bit, but one difference that we have here between this series and the Filmation series, in a way, is they do a little bit more to distinguish two different looks in between Adam and He-Man. It's not as much of a carbon copy. It's not as much as the Clark Kent Superman. You know what I mean? Like they took some concerted efforts to try to distinguish the two characters so that it wasn't as obvious that they were the two same people. Another interesting thing is with the voice, obviously done by Cam Clark, who a lot of us at that time would have recognized from his Turtles work, etc. But from what I've heard, and I think this was on one of the commentary tracks or research somewhere along the way, is that they actually auditioned multiple people for Prince Adam, and then they had separate auditions for He-Man. There wasn't necessarily an intention to have the same person voice both characters.
Right.
However, Cam Clark, according to them, had the best Adam and the best He-Man. So they ended up still going with somebody that was doing both voices, both characters with the same person. So that was interesting. And he does a very good job of separating his two voices.
The reason being is not only is Cam Clark an amazing voice actor, the thing of it is all of his voices I've ever heard, some have been that younger kid and some have been that big, bold kind of character like the right. He-Man voice is. This came out 2002, so yeah, that what I'm going to reference was already out at this point. We had gone back and watched this a number of years ago on DVD, the two of us, because we were doing some sort of review for GCRN or whatever. You had never seen it or whatever it was, but we had seen this a number of years ago, like right before we started Pogs. And even back then, with Cam Clark, I feel like his Adam is more sort of Leonardo-ish. It's not Leonardo from TMNT, but it's sort of that way. However,
it's real close.
Yeah, it's real close. However, his He-Man, it wasn't then, but it's more now, as we're doing this now, as I just watched this, as we're recording this. I heard more Liquid Snake in the He-Man voice. Liquid Snake from Metal Gear Solid games, the villain from Metal Gear Solid. I heard, because he's that voice as well. I heard more of that in He-Man's voice when he's doing the big boastful, like,
right,
you know, not today, Skeletor or Bone Brain or whatever it is that he says, Evil One. Anytime he says Evil One, I'm like, ooh, that is so Liquid Snake, and obviously it is. But the point is, Cam has such a range that why wouldn't they have cast him as both? And I think the other thing is, sorry to cut you off, the other thing is, and I'll mention this later more for story plot, but I'll mention it here. As far as I remember watching the DVD special features, they wanted Adam and He-Man to be so different because, as we've already said, in the original Filmation series, they were basically, you know, just changed clothes.
Right.
Adam's a teenager. Adam's 16, 17, whatever 16. It is. He's a young prince. He's a this, he's a that. And He-Man is, well, He-Man. You know, I mean, he's a big guy. He's an adult. And Adam is still a kid. And that juxtaposition works very well for the series. I'm sure people will compare this to Shazam. Other things like Shazam, as of this recording, had just come out. That movie with obviously Billy Batson being the kid, and then transforming into this, you know, adult version of himself, even though he still acts kid like. And there are moments in this beginning three parter when Adam finally goes and gets the power and becomes He-Man. There are little moments later that I see the little kid in him come out as he is He-Man. It's just like a little smile or something like that, or a little like nod kind of a thing. Mm-hmm. But yeah, no, I absolutely love it.
I will admit that it did, like the Cam Clark that I know from the 80s and early 90s, typically, you know, most of the time would be using that Adam voice, would be using that younger sounding voice because it was really distinct and kind of was his kind of his golden ticket type of thing in the voice acting. And so like when so that's the voice of his that I'm used to. So I got to admit, when I first heard him again as Adam, it always throws me off a little bit because I'm picturing other characters, et cetera, et cetera. I will say by the time the three-parter is over and I'm kind of into the show now, it doesn't as much bug me. It did, not that it bugged me, it just kind of threw me, distracted me maybe a little bit because I'm like, oh, I know this guy as somebody else. But I do like the fact that it is so distinct from what he's doing as He-Man, which is very nice. Not just a lower pitched version of the same voice, but an altogether different take on that. What do you think? Because I know on the commentary track, they talk about the fact that they were considering just starting out at the point where Adam and Teela are doing the little jousting training, et cetera, in the yard. Like that was initially, I guess, at one point going to be one of the spots that they were contemplating starting the episode on. They decided to get that, but, you know, add that more kind of mythological backstory with Keldor and Skeletor. I'm assuming you're a fan of them doing that.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Because we're at a time now and even, you know, back in 2002, I'm sure this was produced somewhere between late 2001, mid 2001 kind of a thing. But even in 2002, most cartoons that we wanted at that time, even though we were all adults by then, we wanted more story-driven cartoons. Episode of the week or villain of the week or that kind of stuff was kind of like going away. And then, you know, this came up and everything else, you know, Turtles, the 2003 Turtles series came up and a lot of other things. So, no, yeah, I absolutely, because we would have been asking the question just like we asked all those questions in the past X number of episodes we did of New Adventures. What's the story? What's the this? What's the that? And they give everything to everybody in here. They give all kinds of development. They create backstories. They do this. They do that. It's just so wonderful and refreshing.
Yeah, and a couple other changes, like you mentioned. Obviously, the Sorceress has a different look, a little bit more of Egyptian-themed look there. I think I like it better. I'm still undecided, but I think I like this version of the Sorceress a little bit better. I'll wait until later on in the series to make a confirmed decision on that. But they also made some other specific choices in this series, and they revolved around the fact that they were not necessarily trying to gear this series towards little kids. Right. They made a concerted effort to make this more towards, maybe like a 9 to you know, teenage year, instead of like a, you know, 5 to 10 age group. Like, they're definitely looking for, you know, upper elementary school, middle school, you know, those types of an audience perhaps. And they made us a couple specific choices to go along with that. Number one, we get a cringer slash battle cat that doesn't speak.
Thank God.
So they I was going to ask you your opinion, but I think I've just learned it. but the idea there was that they didn't want a bunch of animals that talked, because I thought that might have geared it more towards a younger audience. And they also are trying to, obviously we've had a very iconic Skeletor performance from Alan Oppenheimer in the original series. Mm-hmm. And obviously, well, based on our viewings of New Adventure, Campbell Lane was one of the best parts of that series. Even if he might not be as like known and as iconic as Alan Oppenheimer's Skeletor, he was still probably the best part of that series. So they decided with Skeletor, with this one, that they wanted to dial back a little bit with the campiness and some of the over the top, you know, maybe not necessarily cheesiness, but you know, some of that humor and juvenile aspects that we got from him. Not saying they take away his humor. He still has funny lines. He still has things that he says that we're going to talk about. But they were trying to make it a little bit more intimidating, a little bit more serious, and a little less campy. So between Cringer and Battlecat decision and some of the decisions around Skeletor, how did those work or not work for you in the beginning episodes?
They worked so well. Like, I didn't really say anything in my notes about Skeletor being kind of having funny lines or comical until almost the end. It's almost like, you know, when he's gloating is when he is comical. But
yeah, he has a couple in episode 3.
Yeah, this Skeletor, number one, is a hell of a lot more competent. Number two, is completely different, obviously, than the New Adventure Skeletor. He's not under somebody else's thumb. He is the master of evil. Yeah. That's what he is. You know, I mean, honestly, until it's revealed in part two, we see Keldor. We see what happens to Keldor with the green ooze or whatever, you know, the anti-mutagen or whatever the hell it was that, you know, the poison that eventually burned off his face. He's like, ah, my face. And he dives off the cliff and Randor's like, no. And then they escape. We don't see his face. We don't see what happens to him. We see that in the beginning of it, obviously, that Keldor is this blue faced guy and whatever. And he still has the Skeletor kind of voice that Brian Dobson is doing for him, but obviously it's not as evil as it'll become.
Right.
We don't actually get to see the actual reveal of Skeletor's face itself until like halfway into like part two, which I think is really cool. They hide that away. They don't give that away. They don't just, that's the thing with these first three episodes. They give you just enough to stay with it, to want to watch more without needing to. They're not just doing exposition just to do exposition. They're not like, as I watch these three parts back again, it's everything is done for a reason. Everything is done at a time and a pace that is well executed.
Please, forgive the intrusion. Keldor and his forces are moving on the capital.
Yes, we know. We were just discussing how...
You know? You must evacuate. If Keldor's forces breach the Hall of Wisdom, he will be vanquished and all the power of Eternia will be his.
Your forces will defeat him.
And you, Randor, as king, shall rule Eternia in our place.
King? I'm merely a soldier.
Yeah. No, I agree with that. Before we get too much into the story, I just wanted to ask you a couple more questions about characters and some of the stuff like that. I do have perhaps one character that, just based off this initial couple episodes so far, that I like the Filmation version better. I don't know if you'll agree or disagree with me, but I like the Filmation Orko better.
Yes, that is the one I will probably agree with you on. Filmation Orko's design is way better.
and voice. Absolutely. Nothing against Gabe Kuth. I think he does a good job with the role. Mm-hmm. It just doesn't quite work for me as much as the Filmation version did in that series. Like, it's just something's a little bit off on that one for me, just at least in the initial couple episodes. Did you notice that we got to see a pre-Trapjaw version of Trapjaw, Cronus?
Yeah, Cronus, yep.
In the early shot there, kind of the flashback, so that was kind of cool. So getting into the specifics of the episode, and we'll talk more characters as they pop up here and as we join in the discussion, but things you really liked about this first part, anything that you haven't mentioned yet?
I've kind of already mentioned it all.
Okay.
I thought my note about Adam, you know, the teenager thing, it actually is, the note is different, but part of it is here with part one is, I love the way that they make Adam a teenager along with Teela, and yet obviously he becomes a man and turning into He-Man later, but the fact that they're both, at least age range, the same age, like, they're not, one is not old, too much older than the other. One is not an adult, one is not a kid. You know, they're both kids. They're both young and learning and whatever. Obviously, Teela's way further along than Adam is because Adam's a lazy slob and he likes to sleep. But it's just one of those things where it's refreshing to have an Adam that is so different from what he has to become as He-Man.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't know if you noticed another tie-in to Filmation or not, but Merman retrieves the Cordite crystal.
Mm-hmm.
And that is what the Widgets mined back in the Filmation series. I think it had something to do with He-Man's harness as well, as far as what that was forged from. So that's very interesting, cool way to tie it in a different way, as far as that goes. I mentioned that Orko didn't really work for me necessarily. Two that do specifically right away fit the characters perfectly in my mind, and we already talked about Cam Clark, but Gary Chalk as Man-at-Arms is perfect.
Mm-hmm.
And Brian Dobson obviously as Skeletor is perfect. Like, those two are probably the two that most hit it out of the park for me in this first episode.
How long I've waited for this, Randor.
I, like you, do like that they show that Randor-Keldor stuff in the beginning. I like that they specifically tell us the age of Adam, that he's 16. He was having his 16th birthday, basically, in this in this three-parter. I think my favorite part about this whole episode is that because of that back part that they give us, it actually explains, for the first time in my recollection in the whole franchise, where He-Man's power actually comes from. Like, we know it comes from Castle Grayskull, like, we know there's a connection there, but mm-hmm. this one really solidifies that fact that the Council of Elders literally formed together and put all of their power into this oracle, which then is infused into He-Man and the sword, etc. Mm-hmm. So, like, it's very cool that we kind of get that explanation. We have this Council of Elders that's watching over the land, I guess, much like the New Adventures had that kind of council, but this is cooler. And that they, you know, they actually do form into that power, and that's where we're getting the power that turns Prince Adam into He-Man. So I really like that. You mentioned something in kind of your likes that I'm going to mention as kind of my one problem with this episode.
Mm-hmm.
Not necessarily a problem, but my one maybe nitpick. And that is, I do enjoy the fact that they at first don't show Skeletor's face. Like, that is fine. I like that we know something kind of hit him, and we know something's going to be eventually revealed, and he's going to have more of a skeletal look than he did as Keldor, etc. So we know something's cool. They're kind of building the tension as far as not showing us that right away, and I think it's fine when he's got the hood on and it's kind of hunched over and you can't see it, or if there's shadows. I just think they went too far with it. I think there's too many times where it's forced for us not to see it, and it's not natural. Like, there was times where we're looking straight at him and there should be no shadow and his face is blacked out. Like, mm-hmm. that bugged me a little bit. Like, I wouldn't mind if he was kind of sulking around and hiding his face, or if he was truly in dark places and in shadows, but they should have avoided shots that were directly a front shots of him where there was no face shown. Like, that bugged me a little bit.
So let me ask you, okay, I know what face shots you're talking about, like when they're showing just the blackness of the inside of his hood kind of a thing, and it's just all shadows, whatever. I think, I don't remember, and I just watched this, so I should remember this, like, did his eyes ever glow before his face was revealed or anything?
Not in the shots that I'm talking about. The shots I'm talking about were straight black.
Right, okay, so I think the reason why that was done again is not so much that they didn't want to blow the reveal too soon, but they probably, I get that. Well, I mean, I like it because it's a mystery. You don't know. You obviously know it's him. And yeah, you're right. The shadows are a little weird at times. However, they could not have shown it any earlier than when they did. Because to have the effect of, you know, Randor realizing what happened.
Right. I just think they should have done what they did in the right in the way in the beginning. You have him like seated far away on a throne, right, and the whole throne is in the shadow, so you know you're not going to see him. Or you have him like on a, I don't know, like on a mountaintop or hilltop or something. Like you have him far away where he can't be seen, or you have him off to the side just speaking. Those are all fine. I just think they could have avoided some of the, like, he's out in broad daylight, you can see everything around him, but his face is black. Like, yeah, that's the only part.
But close-up shots.
Right. So that was my only nitpick. Are we doing awards for this one? Because I have power swords.
But I think we need to switch it up a little bit for this series and make it a little bit more fresh, and we do all the awards at the end of the show.
Okay. Sounds good. What about ratings?
I have one last note. I do enjoy Adam's skepticism about the whole thing. Like, you don't know what
the resistance
Oh, my 16th birthday party's going to be in here now, kind of a thing, when he goes to Grace, you know, whatever. Just right. The whole skepticism of it. I absolutely enjoy that. Part one I gave a 4. I had to. I just enjoyed it way too much.
Yeah, I waffle back and forth between 4 and 4.5. And this is the part of me that's like, I can't just come right out the gate just because it's better than New Adventures and give everything like 5s. But so I'm at a 4 as well, only because of the nitpick on Skeletor's face, I guess, a little bit. But otherwise, gives us a lot of what we want. Great foundation, great backstory, and good designs, good characters. I'm a fan right off the bat, like we knew we would be. So double 4s for us. We're going to take a quick break and come back with part 2.
It ends here, Keldor. It would appear so, but appearances can be deceiving. In the name of Eternia, I arrest you for crimes against the...
My face!
No.
Retreat!
Pursue them.
It's Showtime Synergy. The latest review podcast from the Geekcast Radio Network is here. So join TFG1 Mike, Nicole Hailstorm, and myself, Lady Rec, as we will be reviewing all 65 episodes of Jow and the Holograms in a 25-episode-long podcast. You can find Showtime Synergy on iTunes and GeekCastRadio.com. We are the truly outrageous podcast that you want to be listening to.
Council members?
Gone. Your men shall succeed in pushing the forces of evil back to the Dark Hemisphere. Peace will come to Eternia, but only for a time.
And then?
A hero shall emerge to protect Eternia.
How will I know this hero? How will I know this hero?
Decian, the superhero webcomic. Decian's got superhero antics and sexy girls. For action, drama, mayhem, and more, read it now at Decian.com. DASIEN.com. And for the new Decian podcast, go to patreon.com/Decian.
Revenge is like Jafari stew. It tastes best when served cold.
All you will taste is the bitterness of defeat, Keldor.
I think not. And the name is Skeletor. Not a pretty sight, is it? You did this.
You brought it on yourself.
Tell me, where are the elders?
I don't know.
Perhaps you can be persuaded to be a bit more forthcoming.
All right, next up, guys, is part two of this three-part pilot slash first episode of the series. Same air date as we mentioned before, August 2002. Good Lord. I'm trying to jump 10 years into the future. August 16th, 2002. Same writer, Dean Stephanie, writing all three parts of this. So this is not much to do with plot here. I mean, obviously, we're continuing the same story here. Adam's actually going to go to Castle Grayskull. Keldor is now, you know, full-on Skeletor, going to reveal himself to that, attack the palace, etc. And we're going to have Randor basically being kidnapped at this point during this episode, I believe. So obviously this middle section of a three-parter, how did you feel that it progressed, and is it on the same level as the first episode so far? What did you like, what did you not like?
Oh yeah, I absolutely love it. I think it lived. I love the way that the series continues in a fuller long play kind of story. Like, yes, do I wish the DVDs or the iTunes or the whatever didn't have the previously on segments in the DVD material. I understand why they needed that, obviously, for when it was airing X number of years ago. But once the story started from the previously on He-Man, I absolutely love it. I love the fuller stories that it has. I love how evenly timed the battle scenes and the speaking scenes are. It's not just all battles. It's not just all talking. It's not just exposition for the sake of exposition.
Right.
It's actually a true way of telling the story without giving out too much, without spending out too much time. Yes, we have Orko throughout kind of a thing, but Orko, at least in this first three-parter, is not as annoying as he most likely will become, even though we don't really like Orko in this series. We don't have that, you know, scientist crap anymore.
Yeah, it's better than that.
Yeah, exactly. No, I agree. This Orko is better than those scientists, but I'm saying, like, we don't have too much time wasted. Hell, we didn't even talk about this at the beginning. Look at the intro. Look at the theme song. By the power, you know, he tries to go into it, and then boom, the villains attack. Like, we're not messing around with this show. Like, we're not giving Adam time to become He-Man in the intro of even the theme song. Like, they're not doing that. They're just attacking and fighting back and whatever, and I love the way that they do that.
Yeah, absolutely. I thought this episode has a lot of good action, a little bit more action-packed than the first episode. Obviously, the first episode has to do a lot of kind of establishing some storylines and stuff like that. This has a lot more action, and I thought they did a really good job of isolating a lot of one-on-one battles that really make it so that we can showcase the character's abilities a bit. They do this in two different ways in this three-parter, and I apologize because sometimes I'm getting the different parts kind of mixed together, but at one point, I think this might be in part one, but if not, it was right away in part two, where each of the villains is taking their best stab at trying to bust down the wall, the mystical wall that's separating the evil warriors from the palace, etc., which was created obviously by the sorceress and etc. to keep them out. But there's a crack in it, and we see each person try it. So we get to see Trapjaw try to highlight one of his abilities. We see Beastman try to do it. We see Evil Lyn try to do it, etc., etc. So that first off does a good job. And then in this episode specifically, we get one-on-one battles between Stratos and Beastman, one-on-one between Evil Lyn and Teela, one-on-one between Trapjaw and Mechaneck, Merman and Manny Faces, Man-at-Arms and Clawful, and then some littler ones where they kind of interchange and et cetera, et cetera. But those are some of the main ones I remember highlighting. And it was really cool because you got to see, like, just for example, Merman and Manny Faces. You get to see Manny Faces use his different faces and kind of what each one brings to it. Mechaneck definitely highlights his abilities with using his head to kind of not just see, but he can use it in battle to, like, basically move someone way across and slam them into a wall or something like that. You get to see Evil Lyn doing a lot of her magic. You get to see Stratos' flying capability. So, immediately in the second episode, we're getting more. more one-on-one shot or more specific attention to specific characters than we get a lot of times in these entire series. Yep. So that was very nice.
In the battle scene that you're talking about, all the characters you just mentioned that are not Man-at-Arms or Teela or whatever, not the normal, like Mechanek and Clawful and Manyface, Mechanek and Manyfaces, this is the most screen time they've had ever.
Yeah, just
ever. I mean, same thing with like Triclops. Triclops was in one episode of the original Filmation series, like one or two, maybe. Right. And it was like late in season two, I think.
Yeah, like they establish him as like, you know, the tech guy, you know,
the tech
we already
spy
know
kind of guy. Yeah, yeah. And Beastman is obviously the guy that talks to the beast. Merman is the fish dude.
It was kind of funny on the commentary because they talk about that they actually did an intelligence hierarchy for the evil warriors. Like they actually put it on a board or on paper or something at one point. They don't go into it specifically, but they do mention that the top three were, obviously Skeletor was the most intelligent and then Evil-Lyn right after that. And they do say that Triclops would have been next before you kind of get down to the rest of them. So it was kind of, they're already kind of outlining some of those things and giving us hints at that right away, even though it's not a ton of time, but they do a good job of isolating, like, hey, this is what, and it's not just, hey, this is a toy and this is what that toy can do. It's like, hey, this is a characteristic or a trait of this character that we're going to establish now because it's going to be used throughout this series possibly.
Yep.
So I thought that was really cool. And obviously this is the first time where Cam Clark or Prince Adam becomes He-Man. I know we already talked about it a little bit in part one, even though it didn't happen in part one. Part two is where he gets the sword. You know, he holds it up high, he turns into He-Man, and we get to see the different voices, etc. So that is a cool part, obviously, of this episode, is the first time we see the transformation. I know you're a big fan of all the different transformations throughout the Filmation series, etc. What did you think of this transformation?
I like it. I understand why they're doing it the way they're doing it.
Mm-hmm.
The only nitpick I have is the power sword.
Yeah, me too.
Why does it have to move and switch and transform and whatever
now
to release the power?
They talk about that a little bit. I don't know if it's why it has to release the power. I know that they talked about the fact that apparently, I don't know which version of the toy, but there's some toy out there where the sword actually did move or did have some type of like action function. That's specifically why they made the sword do that in the cartoon, because they had never had a cartoon where the sword actually had that function that the toy did. I'm not familiar with what toy that would have been, because the toys that I had, the sword was just a static, like stationary object, like it didn't move at all. But apparently there must be one version out there somewhere of one of the toys that had a moving part on that sword, so that's why they did that. But I am not as big a fan of this sword as I am of the Filmation sword. I like the Filmation sword better.
I like the Filmation sword better for the transformation. For what this sword is, I like it in action.
Yeah, I can see that. I can definitely see that. This episode also gives us, maybe I just didn't notice it in part one, but in part two, we get to start seeing part two and part three. And I know this is very like finite detail that nobody really needs to hear about or pays attention to probably, but they do these little transitional bumper type things in between when they're going from like Skeletor to He-Man or good to bad or different settings or whatever. The first one that I noticed is very weird because it's like Skeletor's face, and it's like, all the other ones that I've seen in the first three parts are weapons. Like it's either a Havoc staff or the power sword or something that's like flying through and it's like transition us from one to the other. The first one that I noticed with He-Man's face kind of go, or Skeletor's face kind of twisting around and spinning around, it was really weird.
Yes, Beastman, of course you can. Go back and help the others.
Oh, I never get to have any.
Now that the Council of Elders is no more, where is the power of Eternia?
I told you, I don't know. But if I did, I would reveal nothing.
Perhaps a little not-so-gentle persuasion is in order. Say,
for anybody that's watching the second part, go back and watch that and tell me. I don't know. It seemed like a weird bumper, and I hope they don't do that one again. The weapons are much better. My other nitpick on this one is they finally reveal Skeletor's face, which we talked about. You know, they've been hiding it. It's been black. They finally show it. I don't know if I was as impressed as I was hoping I would be when they show his face. It's a little, I don't know, it's okay. I don't know if it's my favorite version of his face. It's good. But then after they show it, they immediately have another scene, like right after that, where they go back to hiding it again. I'm like, okay, you've already shown his face. Like, you don't have to go back and start being the black face again. Like, so I'm done with that. I need that to be over. But that's just a minor nitpick. Anything else about this episode, good or bad?
The reveal of Adam into He-Man was just amazing. We kind of talked about that. The cliffhangery ending for part two, absolutely love that. I thought that was great. I thought there was going to be something with Skeletor that I nitpicked, but I couldn't tell you what it was. And even hearing you talk about the face thing and how whatever, it wasn't even that. I
think that could have been a little more detail in his face.
I think my issue is, I noticed this more during the battle with him and He-Man in part three, is that the skull, quote-unquote, non-lip or lip movements.
Yeah.
Like, to me, don't, like, what he's saying, the face is obviously, it's a skull, it's a bone, it's a whatever, like, he can't fully conjecturize because he doesn't have skin.
Right.
What he is saying, it looks like an anime type thing where, you know, your mouth moves and then blah blah blah, you know. Yeah. It's one of those things. Does it make me take any points off the episode or off the series? Hell, I don't. It was just something I just noticed, right, as I saw him talking to He-Man or whatever, kind of a thing. And it's a little annoying, but as long as, like you said with the blackface thing, as long as you're not like looking right at it or noticing right on point while he's talking, it's fine. It's not that big of a deal.
Yeah, and the cliffhanger like you're talking about is obviously He-Man's first appearance with the Masters. So it's his first time where they're going to see him, and there's a magnetite headed right for Teela, and we're going to see if he's going to stop it or not. So that's kind of where this episode leaves off. What kind of rating did you give this second part?
4.5.
Okay, so you went up on this one.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Again, everything about it, not only, and this is something we didn't really talk with part two yet, I mentioned it in part one, the animation, not just the style, but the how fluid all the animation is, minus the Skeletor mouth thing, how fluid it all is, the design of it all. I mean, Eternia looks amazing. The fact that we're actually going to other places other than the palace, the castle, or Snake Mountain. Snake Mountain looks fucking awesome.
Yeah.
I mean, I've, like, even back in Filmation, Snake Mountain was impressive then. I'm sorry, this puts that Snake Mountain to shame. I mean, it's basically an updated version of that, but it's so much cooler.
The Snake Mountain is better in this version. I don't know if Castle Grayskull is.
The 3D-ness of it is, if you know what I'm kind of talking about. Yeah. Like, old Filmation Castle Grayskull at times felt very flat.
Yeah.
They never really explored. Like, true, there were several times, obviously, She-Ra, Secret of the Sword, yada, yada, yada. They went through the door. They went through the gate. That's the one thing I was going to mention earlier when we were talking about Castle Grayskull. How they get to where the power is, and how He-Man follows, how Adam follows the sorceress through the castle. Like, we actually see various hallways and the scale and how big it actually is. The outside design, I can kind of agree with you.
Yeah, that's all I was talking about.
It's a little, like, when you're facing it head on, like when the jaw bridge, like, drops, or when, you know, He-Man or Adam is looking right on it, sure, it looks great. That, like, driveway up to it, it's a little off, but it's not
No, I think I agree with you. I think they do a much better job of showing the inside, the scale, the scope of, of how big it is, how crazy it is, how much of a maze it would be to find something in there. Mm-hmm. I just, maybe the outside, like, front part, I maybe prefer the Filmation, but just barely. You went up a little bit on this episode. I'm back and forth. I've had both the first part and the second part at fours. I've had both the first part and second part at 4.5s. I've had one at one and one at the other. I can't decide. What really does it for me is the isolated battles that they show in this one. So my final ranking for right now, same as the first one. I'm at 4 on the first one and 4 on the second one. Yeah. So I can't decide which one I like better. I'm still trying to determine that. So we're going to take a break and see how we end this 3-parter. If it's a positive or if it slides down a little bit, we'll have to wait and see.
Do you like retro cartoons? Then Saturday Morning Rewind is the podcast for you. Join them each month as they talk about classic cartoons and interview legendary voice actors like Jim Cummings.
I am the terror that flaps in the night.
Corey Burton.
Sometimes toys can be so tiny.
Rob Paulsen.
Sure, Blaine, but how are we going to find chaps our size?
Nancy Cartwright and many more.
Eat my shorts.
So grab a bowl of Lucky Charms.
They're magically delicious.
Put on your hammer pants. Go to SaturdayMorningRewind.com. And be prepared to feel like a kid again. Once again, that's SaturdayMorningRewind.com. Saturday Morning Rewind was voted best podcast ever by its host, Tim Nidell. So it's gotta be good.
Information I require after all. I suppose I'll have to settle for revenge. Panthor.
All right, the last episode up for today is The Beginnings Part 3, which is obviously Episode 3, same air date, August 16, 2002, written by Dean Stephan. So obviously the plot is the conclusion of this original story. So we have He-Man, who is attempting to save Randor, who has been somewhat kidnapped by Skeletor. And then we have the rest of the Masters doing their thing, specifically Teela trying to save Man-at-Arms, who has been captured by Merman, as kind of a side story. So that's kind of what we have here, and that it's basically still dealing with that initial idea that this is the first time that the Evil Warriors and Skeletor have been able to get past that wall. This is their first encounter with the world and with trying to figure out what's happening. And then obviously the introduction of He-Man into this whole thing, it's just kind of that first initial encounter that we're concluding here. And then we're going to be able to go on and set the stage for the whole series. One thing we didn't mention that I need to go back and backtrack just a little bit before we get to this episode. Another thing I forgot to say that I really like about the first episode first part, second part, is that when Skeletor first gets past the wall, they do a great job of establishing the fact that he doesn't understand or know what has happened on the other side of the wall since he's been there. You know, he's coming out expecting to go back and march back in and find the Council of Elders and all this other stuff and the building they were in, et cetera, which none of it exists. And so part of it is his search for them and their power and what happened, et cetera. So I do like the fact that he is kind of a fish out of water, not realizing what has happened in the time that has passed. So I just wanted to get that out of the way. But as far as this wrap up of the 3-parter, I'll give you the stage for a little bit. What did you like and dislike?
Oh, Randor, do try and scream on the way down, won't you? I'm curious as to just how long a drop it is. Yes, Panthor, I think we are going to enjoy this.
Think again, evil one. Release the king and surrender.
Surrender? Have you the faintest inkling to whom you speak? I am Skeletor, Overlord of Evil!
And I am He-Man, Defender of Eternia.
A hero shall emerge to protect Eternia.
Yeah, you're right about the Skeletor storyline. And again, it goes to character development. It goes towards, you know, characterized storytelling. I mean, they did everything right with the character storytelling in these first three episodes, I think. He-Man's arrival and everything that he did in the battle, plus the battle with Skeletor, just so damn good. I need to look this up, or I need to message my He-Man historian buddy James E. Talk and ask him. I know it was part of the original story with the action figures when we watched Power of Grayskull, the definitive film. I think they mentioned about how He-Man has half and Skeletor has half, so no one side, good or evil, has the key to Castle Grayskull with the swords. But Skeletor, the dual swords, oh wow, that's awesome. Not only does he have the Havoc staff, but he has the dual power sword thing. That is so friggin' cool. Absolutely love that. As I mentioned earlier, has some funny lines in here as well. Battle Cat versus Panthor. Wow. That's a battle that they started on the screen and just kept going and going and going off screen until, you know, Skeletor was like, okay, here we go. Let's get out of here, kind of a thing. Orko is annoying, but the good thing about Orko in this is everyone shuts him up fairly quickly. Like, once the secret is, you know, being kept, kind of a thing, both He-Man at different times, both He-Man and Man-at-Arms say stuff to basically, without belittling Orko or telling him to shut up, you know, Orko isn't Rat Trap. There isn't, like, this great big thing where Man-at-Arms can say to Orko, you know, shut up, Orko, like, shut up, Rat Trap, kind of a thing. It's not that at all, but they do a great job of only allowing Orko so much, at least at this point. Like, he had one scene with the magic trick stuff earlier.
Orko may not be Rat Trap, but Merman is Waspinator.
Yes, Merman is most definitely Waspinator.
That is for sure.
It's kind of nice having some of the beats, and honestly, after, you know, again, two-time MOTU voice actor in Gary Chalk, he was He-Man Adam in, well, no, he wasn't Adam, he was He-Man in New Adventures, and he's Man-at-Arms here. I think Gary's voice lends more to Man-at-Arms as a character in general than He-Man, but... absolutely dug it. I thought it was great.
So I watched all three of these episodes on the DVD complete series set, with just watching them straight. Then there is some of the episodes throughout this whole series that have commentary tracks, with Dean Stephan and a few of the other people involved. And I was able to rewatch the first episode with the commentary track on, and the second one also has one. I only got about halfway through that. The third one has one. I didn't get to watch that at all. But I'll try to watch most of these beforehand so I can add any little tidbits and trivia or whatever. Mm-hmm. But one thing that they mentioned before they even get to the third one, I think they talk about it in part two commentary, is that basically this was, and this is going to get to kind of some of my why I'm going to come down a little bit on this episode from the other two. Originally, this whole intro pilot, you know, multi-part initial foray into this series was supposed to be a two-parter. And the artist and the storyboard and et cetera, did, you know, kind of ran wild with it, and they thought that they had, you know, too much for two parts. So they had two decisions to make. And it was either to really hack it up a little bit and take a whole bunch of stuff out to make it get down to the length that it needed to be for two parts, or to keep everything in and add some filler to make it enough for three, because they were kind of between two and three episodes. Mm-hmm. My only problem with that, and I'm glad that they didn't take anything out necessarily, because I wouldn't have wanted them to cut some of that stuff that we got away, But you can, I think it's, and I want to listen to the commentary for the third one to see if they specifically mention this, but it seems to me that it's blatantly obvious that this is the episode that has the filler, and it is the entire segment of the side story with Merman and Man-at-Arms, and I could have done without that.
Lava pool. Nothing could survive those temperatures.
Precisely.
Precisely.
Return!
Maybe you can return it for a refund.
Because to me, all it did was slow down the story and mess with the pacing a little bit of what I cared about. I did not care about that part of the story at all. I didn't care. I thought it just drug on way too long as far as Teela trying to rescue her dad and Merman when the big sea monster thing. And all I wanted to do was get back to either more one-on-one battles with the evil warriors and the masters that are without Skeletor and without He-Man, or get to He-Man, Skeletor, and Randor and spend more time with that. Like, I don't know if I like that side story being in, kind of put into this episode.
I agree and I disagree, because it's one of those things where the way I'm viewing this three-parter, especially the third part here, is that the Masters and the Evil Warriors, more so on the Masters' side, it's military. It's Army, it's Navy, it's Air Force, it's Marines, it's whatever military thing you want to say about it. Each part, each warrior has their own part of a battle, and there was already so many people for everybody else to fight that Teela could go off and try to save her father. I do agree, the scene lasted a little bit too long, but I don't not like that they did do the scene. Because, let's face it, it has the biggest attorney in fart in history.
Yeah, like I said, that whole sequence I just wasn't a big fan of. I thought it, like I said, brought the pacing of the whole episode down a little bit. What I did like you mentioned, Skeletor has a couple great lines, you know, having his fingers crossed when he makes the promise or whatever. And then this is Filmation Skeletor coming through here, so I'm glad they didn't completely take out his humor. But at one point he has the line, "Such courage, I believe I'm going to gag." So that was a fantastic line. The only other things that I kind of was nitpicking a little bit was there's not much of a transition of He-Man learning what his powers are and how to use them. And I don't necessarily have a huge problem with that, because he is, you know, infused with this power of the elders. So he's going to be, some of it's just going to be like, hey, he has his power. He's a big giant dude. Like, he knows how to do certain things, but I get that he has this powerful sword and whatnot. When he first arrives with the Masters, I don't know why he would just inherently know that he's going to be able to break the earth and pick up a big chunk of it that is, like, take Luke Skywalker, for example. You know what I mean? Like, he has the Force in him. He doesn't know how to, or know that he can, lift up an X-Wing. You know what I mean? Like, it's not just he's like, oh, here's this, I'm going to magically pick this up. Like, I wish there was something that would have been like where he struggled, or where he like did something by accident and was like, oh crap, like I'm really strong now. You know what I mean? Like, something that wasn't just like, hey, I'm going to just pick up a mile of earth.
Yeah. Well, the difference between this and Filmation is, while he does pick it up, he doesn't just pick it up. It is a strain on him, because I think that straining part of the scene where he ends up on bended knee kind of a thing,
right,
and then he ends up back on his feet, like, it's him learning, like, you know, hey, I have this power. I'm not just going to pick this up and heave-ho
no.
a whole island of water kind of thing.
It was just the initial thought that
right.
triggered in his mind that I'm going to attempt to pick up this land. Like, it was like, what? Like, it wasn't just like he was catching that big rock or the meteorite thing that was coming at him. I don't know. That seemed a little bit weird. I would have liked that to be a little bit more eased into it. But other than that, he also knew that Skeletor's weapon was called a Havoc Staff. That's convenient. But that's neither here nor there. So what about a rating for this one for you?
I gotta give it a 5. It was just
what?
So enjoyable. Yes, it was just so
enjoyable.
No way
is this better than the other two parts.
They're all good. If I could give them all
this
fives,
is a
I
major
would.
Step down from the first two parts.
No, it's all of it together.
Together, yes, but this is the inferior part of the three.
Well,
I give this one a three.
What?
Yeah,
no.
This was nowhere near the echelon of the first two parts. That whole they spend 10 minutes dealing with Man at Arms and Merman, which totally has nothing to do with this whole three parter. Like I know, like this is not even close to as good as the first two parts. It's a three. The other two are fours, maybe four and a half. This one is three at the best, three and a half.
Mm-hmm.
That's my thought.
So, the reason besides of what you're saying with Man at Arms, the reason why I'm giving it a five is mainly because of Adam as He-Man himself, whatever, two different people, whatever you want to say, where he basically has to pretend that that's not his father, that's just the king. And the whole thing of at the end of there, you know, where he's digging his sword in and making sure he can save the king, and the king, you know, Randor asks him, "You have any idea how we're going to get out of here?" He goes, "I have no clue."
Yeah, I like
and
that
obviously
part.
Stratos comes in and everything else, and we kind of get this, not really a happy ending, everybody's going to be okay, but we get that a little bit, and then we get obviously Skeletor wanting to obviously do more and kind of that. So that's why, more so than I'm giving it a five. Again, Battle Cat, Panthor battle, very cool. The actual battle with all of the Masters and Evil Warriors, very, very cool. Absolutely love that.
I think you are possibly ranking it based on the fact that it's a three-parter and this is like the culmination of it, but I think if you're really looking at the individual parts, I don't think this is as good as the other two. Like, you basically, and I have no problem with this, but you basically went up on each episode. So you started four, then go four and a half, and go to five. So basically each part got better for you. I think it's the opposite. I think if you were to really nitpick, the part one is the best. We get that backstory, the Kelador part, the really, mm-hmm. the mythology. I think it's the second one's either just right on par or just maybe a tiny, tiny, tiny bit worse. And then I think the third part's worse than the other. I think it gets gradually worse as we go through the three-parters. None of them are bad. None of them are bad episodes. Yeah. I'm not saying that. Like, I'm at three, three and a half, maybe on the last one. So that's still a positive above average rating. So I think it's a good start.
Mm-hmm.
A lot to like.
Yep.
All right, any as we're kind of summing this three-parter up, do you have specific people that really stood out or in a good or negative way overall?
Yeah, so we can get to the Power Swords and Havoc Staff things. I'll give a Power Sword to almost everybody because it's so new, it's so interesting, it's so different. Even Whiplash and Clawful had some great battle scenes in there, and they're not in this three-parter, you look at the character scenes that Clawful has, and Clawful is just a dumbass. But the battle scenes with him and with who he's fighting and stuff like that, that was really cool. What about you on Power Swords?
I think Man-at-Arms, first of all, I think he does a good job of establishing himself kind of as that like person that is the bridge between He-Man and Adam, and you know, who knows and who doesn't know. I think Gary Chalk is perfect for his voice, so I really like what we see with Man-at-Arms, and also the fact that he is there at the beginning with Randor and Kelador, like he's got that tie-in for everything. Mm-hmm. So I really like Man-at-Arms. I think the Sorceress is pretty badass in this so far. And then from the other side, I would probably say they do a really impressive job of establishing Evil Lyn as a badass and as someone not to be messed with. Like, she levels an entire forest at one point. So her power is almost up there rivaling Skeletor. And I think they just do a really good job of establishing her as one of the main villains that is actually competent. And then they even tease it a little bit at the end where there's almost a little bit of dissension between her and Skeletor. Mm-hmm. So I really like that. And then Skeletor, like he's great. His voice is great. And he's got just the right amount of humor for me where it's not campy, but he's still funny, but intimidating. So I like that. Go ahead.
He's more sinister than silly.
Yeah. But he does have a little silly, which is cool. Mm-hmm. And then if I'm on the other side, Havoc Staff-wise, it's really just for me, maybe Prince Adam at the beginning. He's a little, but he's a 15, 16-year-old, so I get it a little bit. Like, he's got to be a little bit of a bitch. But he definitely is in that first episode, running away from his, the first time he gets, you know, presented with the power and the story. He's like, I'm out of here. You know, kind of a bitch move. And then the Evil Warriors, Outside of Evil Lyn, none of them come across as too competent in the in this first section. There is one spot where whatchamacallit, I think Merman gets the best of Manny Faces in that one-on-one battle. But other than that, they most of them get their ass handed to them in those one-on-one battles. Most of their powers are not strong enough to, you know, help break down the wall. I know Evil Lyn's wasn't either, but some of them just came across as kind of, you know, the dumb henchmen, which is fine. We need some of those, but I still got to give them a Havoc Staff for it.
Yeah. So I have to give a Havoc Staff to, obviously, Orko.
Yeah.
I don't know how. I don't remember off the top of my head what goes, because it's been years since I rewatched this again. So
right.
We'll have to see further how more annoying he gets. But what little annoying he was in the beginning, I'm glad they quelled it a little bit. He still has to have a Havoc Staff. And the only reason why I'm going to give this character a Havoc Staff is because I don't like the rhyming. Evil Lyn, the rhyming magic has got to go. That's the only thing I don't like about her and her character, is just the rhyming magic thing. And yeah. I'm like, ooh, at first I was like, ooh, this isn't going to be a rhyme. So let me think, what word is she going to rhyme? Oh, wait, that wasn't the word that she was going to rhyme with.
Yeah, I'm not a big fan of that either, but I still think she came across as basically mostly a badass in this, so mm-hmm. I can't complain too much in general about her. So mm-hmm. that's the first three-parter. Good way to start off.
Yep, absolutely.
Last chance, Skeletor. If you surrender now, you'll be placed in prison and treated with mercy.
Mercy? What a ridiculous concept.
Thank you for listening to us, as we are the Masters of Grayskull. If you'd like to get in contact with us or leave feedback for the show, there are several ways to do so. Visit the website, geekcastradio.com, where Steve has worked his ass off on the new design. You can comment on this and all of our other podcast posts, including this show and other shows as well. Leave the show's feedback in iTunes. Please do this. We are being positive now, folks. You can leave us reviews again. You could have left us reviews when we were being negative, but yes, anyway, do that. Follow us on Twitter, at Geekcast Radio is the network Twitter. The show Twitter is at Powell Grayskull. I am at TFG1Mike. What is your Twitter?
Optimus Solo.
Become a fan on Facebook. Go to facebook.com/Geekcast Radio Network. We hope you enjoyed the Grayskull goodness today, and don't forget to join us in our next adventure, when we will take a look at the next three episodes of He-Man and the Masters of the Universe from 2002, which are The Courage of Atom, Sky War, and we jump into the deep end. For now, I am TFG1 Mike with
Optimus Solo.
By the power and for the honor of Grayskull, we have the power.
You will never speak of what you've seen in Castle Grayskull